20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Appreciate you guys being here as always. We're in just a moment going to be going over, I say just a moment, but we actually got a lot of stuff to go over, but eventually we're going to be talking about the key contracts that are going to be coming up next offseason and which players are in key contract years and what that means for those specific players. And more importantly, what it means for the Green Bay Packers. We'll get to all of that momentarily. We do have a lot to get into today. Starting off with huge shout out to Pack Attack Cast for becoming an all new all pro member. Appreciate that a ton. If you guys have not checked out the memberships yet, make sure to do so. It's a huge way to support the channel and we appreciate it greatly. So Pack Attack Cast, thank you so much to you. Meanwhile, just want to take a moment to pass along my condolences to the Irsay family. Obviously, Jim Irsay, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, passed away unexpectedly on Wednesday. And just obviously somebody had a lot of influence in the league. Owner of Indianapolis obviously had a love of his franchise and will definitely be missed. So again, thoughts, prayers, condolences, not only to the Irsay family, but to the Indianapolis Colts community as well. Let's jump into some Packers news and notes. First and foremost, the Packers did sign a new cornerback on Wednesday. His name is Gregory Jr., was a former six-round draft pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2022. This should not come as a surprise to you, but he was a top 30 visit by the Green Bay Packers. They love their top 30 visits, and it just seems like those guys eventually come, or should say become Packers at some point in time. Gregory Jr., the latest version of that, was an 8.87 relative athletic score coming out of college with a 4.46 40-yard dash. He has played in the league. Last year was hurt, but the two prior years did get on the field in the regular season, so he does actually have NFL snaps. Went back and watched some of them. He did execute a quite beautiful double-arm DDT Mick Foley style in one game. That was pretty sweet. The guy just came into him and he kind of dropped down on him. It was pretty sweet looking. But outside of that, scheme fit. Think he fits very well within what this Jeff Hafley defense wants to do. I would say can play outside or inside. He's played both of those spots in the NFL already. Again, not a ton of snaps in the NFL, but he's got enough. And again, he has shown the ability to be versatile and play either in the slot or on the outside. He comes up and tackles well, and I think that's going to be a key part for him. The only thing that, and this is kind of important, the only thing I wasn't super impressed by was just his pure coverage skills. And I thought that was a little bit lacking, but he's young. And listen, with these type of signings, give Green Bay the benefit of the doubt. They've been phenomenal, especially at corner, right? Rasul Douglas, Keyshawn Nixon are two great examples of that. Even Corey Ballantyne is somebody that they pick up, get a couple of real solid years out of for almost nothing. Core special teamer, can play corner in a pinch. Had that big run against that, Chargers, Lions, Chiefs stretch of wins where he played really well and was starting, if I remember correctly, in those games. So Green Bay has done a really great job with these type of players. Maybe they find somebody in Gregory Jr. We'll keep an eye on him in OTAs, mini camps, training camp, preseason, etc., to see if he gets in any of this conversation for a backup role. Special teams is going to be huge for him, but an interesting signing for Green Bay. Meanwhile, they do release another corner on the team, Caleb Hayes, who was not on the team very, very long, but he will now hit the waiver wire, and Green Bay takes up Gregory Jr., again, former six-round pick by the Jaguars, in his place. Of course, some of the big news that dominated the entire NFL cycle on Wednesday was the ultimate decisions on some of these rule changes. And let's start with the tush push. I've talked about this pretty clearly. This is one I did not have a major horse in the race. If it were probably just up to me, you gave me the ability to make any decision that I wanted on it, I would probably say, yeah, let's get it out of the game. I don't feel convicted by it. I do feel like, hey, Philly's done a great job with it. And to just take it away from them when they've done a great job, when there's not really a injury risk or competitive advantage or disadvantage, that seems a little bit weak, I guess. But if I am in charge of what's like good for the game long term, are people tuning in to a tush push? No, probably not. Is it that much different than a QB sneak, which is still going to exist? No, probably not. This is why, I'm not convicted by it one way or the other. I don't really care. My hope is that we can just be done with this now. My belief is that we won't be, and this is something we'll address next year, whether we get a new injury or a couple teams flip-flop on their decisions. I don't know. I don't know where this goes from here. It is interesting. It came out that the NFL did, in fact, kind of, you know, push and nudge the Packers into making this proposal. All of the major committees, the rules committee, the safety committee, all of these committees were unanimously in favor of banning the tush push. It went 22-10 as yes to ban it, but you needed 24 votes. So it does not pass. Like I said, let it be as it is. I don't really care one way or the other, but the tush push is for now here to stay. It did not get banned. And I am sure we're going to see it a few times at least against Philly, who already was trolling Green Bay after they won the decision, you know, brought Jason Kelce to the floor. Apparently there was some heated moments in those conversations, not with Kelce, but with the owner of Philadelphia and some of the other owners in that private meeting. But interesting to say the least that it stays in the game. And we'll see what that means moving forward. And if we have to go through this entire discussion again next year, if it is, hopefully it's not Green Bay that proposes it again. Just as a quick aside, I hate that it was Green Bay that's attached to it. But why do we have to attach a team to any of these? One of the teams proposed it. It doesn't really matter who it is. And you voted pro or against it. 22 teams voted for it, 10 voted against, and that's all we need to know. I don't really care that Detroit was the one who proposed the change in playoff seeding. I don't care who proposed these rules. Just say that an NFL team proposed this change and go from there. Now, it probably gets out anyway, and Rappaport or Schefter probably report on it, whatever, but it just, I don't know that we need to have the team that actually proposed. I don't really care either way, but Tush Push is here to stay. End of story for now. And we'll probably revisit it again next offseason. Meanwhile, the Detroit Lions, who did propose the playoff seeding changes, rescinded their proposal and it was not voted on, which basically means they didn't have the votes. Now, as you know, I am very pro changing the playoff seeding. I think it makes all the sense in the world. Let me just say this. I've received some pushback from those in comments and whatever. I don't personally feel like this is that big of a deal one way or the other. Certainly not anything to get angry over or that I'm going to argue over or anything like that. As I've said, it's not broken now. I just personally think it can be better. If you like it the way that it is, that's fine. I'm not mad at you. I'm not saying that this is like the stupidest thing in the history of the world. I think it is a very clear and obvious decision to go in the direction that Detroit wanted to go. I cannot see any reason why it would be wanting to cap the other way, but it's not something that I care about all that much, nor am I, upset if you feel the other way on it. I'm not going to get in your face, you're an idiot. I don't see it that way, but that's okay. Again, that's sort of the fun part of this is the debate, the discussion, the conversations about it, talking about it, and then moving on when these decisions are made. I do like the fact, and I do think it is smart in this case, that what it seems to have been sort of the ultimate decision here is like, hey, we're going to have an 18 game schedule soon. And with that is going to come a new scheduling sort of matrix and how we go about scheduling games, which is going to come out with, all new sort of, matchups and potential tiebreakers. And then do we want another playoff team? And then we're going to have to look at how we seed those teams then. We've got a huge change to all of that stuff coming around the bend sooner rather than later. Do we really need to make this change now and then make another change when we go to 18 games and change everything up then? And I think with that logic in mind, I'm really cool with this just taking a pause for now. Once you get to the 18 game schedule, which is going to happen, make it happen at that point where you review everything for best possible scenarios. From what the schedule looks like, how you look at the divisions and conference and the tiebreakers and the seeding and look at all of it. Make the holistic changes that you need to make one way or the other and make that determination at that time. I think that makes sense. I'm totally cool with that. On board with it 100%. I think, again, the Detroit way of doing it is better. But if there's a chance to do that down the road and just make those changes, then do it then. We don't need to change it now. And I'm cool with it as for now, as is, without having to make any changes to it. The onside kick one did pass. That is interesting to me. The two things that passed here is, number one, you're able to go or declare an onside kick anytime you are losing in the game. It doesn't have to be just in the fourth quarter anymore. If you're in the second quarter and you're losing and you want to take an opportunity to kick an onside kick, you have the right to do so. You still have to declare it. You can't do a surprise onside kick, but you can do it at any point in the game in which you are losing. It's a smart move. That piece of it's very smart, because there were times last year where, like, a team was down significantly, like 28 points or something, or maybe even more, and they score a touchdown and there's like a minute left in the third quarter, and that team really needs to kick an onside kick in that situation, and they weren't able to. It was just a weird scenario. So they had to kick off, and they're just running out of possessions at that point in time. In those scenarios, it probably really doesn't matter. The team's not going to come back anyway. But if you are going to come back, you're going to need some luck on your side and recover multiple onside kicks. And the fact that the NFL at that point was saying you can't even do it definitely handcuffs you a bit. This is a better way of doing it. The other piece of it that passes is that it moves the onside kick 1 yard forward, trying to create a little bit more competitive balance on those onside kicks to give the kicking team more of an opportunity to recover the kick. Whether or not that works or not will remain to be seen. It certainly, I'm sure, will not hurt it. I talked about this with Justice. To me, 10% is the Mendoza line. Right now at about 6%, I can see why, you know, you want to make it a little bit more filled with drama than, like, you know, basically one out of every 20 times. It's a little bit less than that, I get it, but like one out of every 20 times that you're going to recover it. If it's about one out of every 10, that keeps a little bit of the drama late in the game. I really don't want it more than that. I want the team that's better and has earned the win up until that point to win, and not to just have to, you know, get a bounce that goes against them or whatever in a weird way, letting the other team recover. I think 10% feels about right. If this can get it from 6% to 10% without it maybe going over aggressively, I think this can be a good rule change. What I'd like to see is then reevaluate it next year to see what happened this year, which I'm sure they probably will. But I have no issue again with this passing, and I'm interested to see just how this changes the onside kick recovery rate going into 2025. Other news and notes: Buffalo Bills are your Hard Knocks team. The NFC East is your in-season Hard Knocks division. Packers stay away from both of those, which I'm sure people are not going to be too upset by from a Packers standpoint. And then last but not least, there will be a game at Lambeau Field September 6th, a Sunday, 2026. It will not be a Packer game. It will be the Wisconsin Badgers taking on Notre Dame. Lambeau Field, September 6th, 2026. I was a little bit confused by that, because that's a Sunday. I'm like, that's like a, why are we putting a game on an NFL Sunday? But it's a late Labor Day that year, in next year, I should say. And that Labor Day will fall on the 7th, which means that Thursday football will follow the week after that. So when the Packers win the Super Bowl this year, they'll play a few days after that at Lambeau Field. Hopefully the field will be in good enough conditions. But yeah, my guess is that if they do not win the Super Bowl, there's probably a pretty good chance that that's a road game next year in week one, just to give the field a little bit of time to rest in between. It doesn't need it for certain. You know, Green Bay's going to go, what, Sunday football to Thursday night football at Lambeau Field this year? So it certainly can handle it. It's not that it can't, but we'll see what happens. It's not anything set in stone from a, you know, home game, away game next year. But Badgers, Notre Dame, Lambeau Field, September 6, 2026. Next year should be a very fun event if you are in the Green Bay area and a fan of either the Badgers or Notre Dame or just college football in general. We'll be right back. All right, that brings us to our main topic for today, and that is Packers free agents in 2026 and players this year that are in key contract years. We're going to go over on unrestricted free agents, restricted free agents, exclusive rights free agents, and players that have contracts that the Packers can get out of, which basically almost puts them in sort of a pseudo contract year. We're going to start with the big one, which is unrestricted free agents. Now, they have two players Trey Hill and Christian Welch, where if they make the team, they'll be unrestricted free agents next year. We're not going to go over them in great detail. Let's see if they can actually make the team first, and then we can worry about that down the road. But just know, if Trey Hill or Christian Welch make the team, they will be unrestricted free agents next year. There are 12 other unrestricted free agents for Green Bay that we need to talk about here. This is not an insignificant amount of unrestricted free agents in 2026. This is a pretty sizable group, and some of these players are obviously very important to what Green Bay does. Let's start off with Rashid Walker. Rashid Walker, starting left tackle the past couple seasons, was a seventh round pick, and Green Bay found a heck of a steal in the seventh round. He is now going into this offseason having to compete for that starting left tackle spot with first rounder Jordan Morgan and potentially second rounder Anthony Belton. He's going to have his work cut out for him. He could lose that battle. He could win that battle, and or there could be some sort of rotation there. My prediction is a rotation between Rashid Walker and Jordan Morgan until one of them maybe just grabs it and says, nope, I'm the guy. Or they just both play well and they continue to rotate at left tackle, or an injury decides and Morgan's got to move somewhere else, or one of those two goes down and the other just takes over. That's my guess, just my hypothesis. But I think those two are going to be the ones that are going to mostly be battling it out at left tackle. This is not ideal for Rashid Walker, who I'm sure would love to be the unquestioned starting left tackle and get ready for that Dan Moore type contract, which was over $20 million per year as he went from Pittsburgh to Tennessee this past offseason. And I think Rashid Walker is right there from a talent standpoint with Dan Moore, if not even potentially a little bit better. So Walker's going to want to play a ton, and he's going to want the opportunity to go earn that big contract next year. Now, from a Packers standpoint, that's great. You want Rashid playing his best this year, and you want him being a great left tackle. Even if that ends up with him signing elsewhere next year, it means A, he's had a great year this year when he's still on the team, and B, maybe he does get a big-time contract somewhere else, and that's going to net you a potentially very large compensatory pick in return. Probably a fourth rounder. Don't think he can get up to the third, but probably a fourth round pick, which you would gladly take still. Now, again, you get a really good Rashid Walker if that's the case this year. You probably let him walk in free agency. I will say this. The overarching odds are that Rashid Walker is not back next year. You have Jordan Morgan who can play there. You have Anthony Belton who could potentially play there. If Zach Tom is back, he could potentially play there. You've got a lot of options, plus free agency, the draft next year. I think they're going to be probably only able to pay one, maybe two of these offensive linemen, and probably in an ideal world, just one. And that's probably Zach Tom, who we'll talk about in just a moment here. I don't think it's an impossibility that Walker could be back. And if Walker just goes out and plays great at left tackle this year, you genuinely don't just let great left tackles in their prime walk out the door. If they feel great about Morgan and Belton and the rest of the line, could they still do that? Sure. But if he plays great, that's going to be noteworthy. And you have to kind of just figure out if, like, hey, do we really want to let this guy out and let him sign somewhere else? So we'll see. It's going to be very dependent upon how he plays this year. And I think the overarching likelihood is that he's gone next year and that Jordan Morgan's probably the starter at left tackle. But if Walker's just great, and especially if Belton and Morgan don't look entirely ready to take on that mantle of left tackle, I do think there's a world in which Walker could be back next year, even if I don't think it's the most likely scenario, and I would probably put it at about 90% chance that he ends up for another team next year in unrestricted free agency, again, netting Green Bay a pretty solid compensatory pick in the process. Next up is Kingsley Enagbare. I've talked about it before, just even yesterday with my roster locks. I don't think Enagbare is a lock to make this team. If he does make it, he'll obviously be an unrestricted free agent, and I think there's a good chance that Green Bay probably lets him walk in free agency as well. You have LVN, you have Rashawn Gary, Baron Sorrell, Colin Oliver, and potentially still Brenton Cox if he stays on the team this year, which there should be a pretty good chance that he does. That probably gives you enough. Even on like a TJ Slayton type deal where he goes somewhere else and gets something like that, I don't think Green Bay has much interest in him, you know, at that price. Same thing I'll say about Rashid. If he goes out and has an unbelievable year, maybe just takes that starting spot opposite Rashawn Gary. LVN doesn't step up. Sorrell and Oliver look like they're going to take some time. And Enagbare is just the unquestioned number two. Then you're going to have a conversation about it. And in a contract year, you never know which of these players are going to show up big. Hopefully Enagbare does show up big this year. That'd be great. Would have no qualms about that whatsoever. But I think the more likely scenario is that either he doesn't make the team and he goes somewhere else this year and probably via trade in that situation, or he does make the team and he walks next year and Green Bay probably again has the opportunity to get a compensatory pick. But I will say you can only get four compensatory picks. They might end up with a lot of these guys signed elsewhere and the max you can get is four. So just worth noting there as well. Number three is Zach Tom. I don't think Zach Tom is going to end up anywhere besides Green Bay. He feels like the true 1A guy that you want to resign on this entire list. I will say, I don't think it's entirely impossible that he could be gone. The only thing I'll say here is that Green Bay looks for ways to sort of stay as frugal is going to have a negative connotation to it. But if they have the opportunity, let's just put it this way. If Jordan Morgan and Anthony Belton both look great, okay? Like fantastic. And you feel like Morgan can be your starter at left tackle and Belton can be your starter at right tackle and Banks is still at left guard. We'll see if maybe they keep Elgton Jenkins at center and maybe you can get Sean Ryan, who maybe has a good year this year. And it's like a $10 million deal or $12 million deal. And Zach Tom's asking for closer to 30. Maybe you can get away with that. I'm not saying I would do it. I'm bringing back Zach Tom almost no matter what. Awesome right tackle. He's been great since basically day one. Can play five different positions along the offensive line. There's just too much value there. He's a legitimate big-time player. I do think that there's probably some matchups like an Aiden Hutchinson and others that can give him some problems. He's not perfect, but he's really damn good. And he's definitely deserving of a roster spot on this team. My hope is that he's back. I would put it very, very high likelihood, but not impossible that if the price just gets extremely high, that Green Bay could say, you know what? We got guys that we trust. It may not be quite as good as Zach Tom, but we can get it to 85% of that, still be good, and then spend way more money elsewhere because we're not going to give Zach Tom $30 million per year or whatever he ends up getting. It's going to be a very interesting one to kind of keep an eye on. I think they should get the Zach Tom deal done sooner rather than later. I think there's a great chance that he's back, but it will be one to kind of monitor over the course of the next, I guess, year or so, a little bit less than that. So next 10 months or so. Next up is Romeo Doubs. I think it is exceedingly unlikely that he is back next year. It's really tough to find the opportunity. Now, the best way, if Romeo Doubs came to me and said, Andy, I want to stay a Green Bay Packer. What is my best way to remain a Green Bay Packer in 2026 and beyond? I would say, Romeo, I got you covered. What you need to do is develop a rapport with Jordan Love that you are his go-to wide receiver. You've got to have your best season of your career, and you've got to be, when Jordan looks your way, you guys are on the same page with everything. You're spending extra time with him, and so much so that it is undeniable that you're his number one target, and that Jordan is probably going to the front office and saying, you guys got to bring Romeo back. That's his opportunity. He's got to have an unbelievable year, probably like almost take that role of number one wide receiver in Green Bay and be Jordan's go-to target. If he accomplishes that, he'll have a real chance to be back. Anything else, and just kind of the Romeo that we've seen so far, which is a very good wide receiver, I think he's probably gone. You look at the wide receiver room, Matthew Golden will be back next year. Savion Williams, Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed. You've got four guys back already. And there's probably a much better likelihood that you can get Christian Watson back on a one-year sort of cheaper deal because he's coming off that injury, whereas Doubs probably goes for more on a 3 or 4 year deal on the open market, which is going to be tougher to match. So I think that Doubs is a very good wide receiver, but I think it's very unlikely he ends up back in Green Bay next year. Not impossible, but I think mostly unlikely. And then again, Green Bay will likely reap a compensatory pick for him leaving and going to another team. Next up is Matt Orzech. We don't need to spend a ton of time here. Matt Orzech, the long snapper, The only thing I'll say is it seems like they have kind of found somebody that's at least steadied the ship at long snapper. I don't think Orzech is like upper echelon. There's still some misses from time to time, some inconsistencies, but he seems to have leveled it out quite a bit. And I think he's actually been, at least last year, was much better. If he continues that, I think Green Bay will probably just look to bring him back. Not like they're going to get anything, you know, compensatory-wise for Matt Orzech, but we'll see what he kind of plays like this year, if there's any competition at any point, or if he's just the unquestioned guy and Green Bay looks to bring him back in 2026. Next up is Sean Ryan. We kind of talked about this a little bit as we were talking about Rashid Walker. Again, when you have Zach Tom, Rashid Walker, and Sean Ryan, it's just really tough to pay all of those guys. I do think that Sean Ryan has become a good guard. It's funny. Sean Ryan's almost like the opposite of Josh Myers in a variety of different ways. Some of those are good ways. But with Josh Myers, it was like every single time anyone was asked about Josh Myers, any coach, front office personnel, anyone was like, yeah, Josh is playing great. We're so happy to have him on the team. He's a leader. Like he's doing everything we asked of him. He's playing the best football of his career. With Sean, it's like unprompted of like, Sean's got to stay in better shape. Sean's got to work on better practice habits. Yeah. Didn't think Sean played up to the level that he was capable of playing at last week. And it would be like, man, okay. I'm sure he can play better, but like, he's out playing the guy that you're giving compliments to every single week to a pretty ridiculous extent. But it's just funny how some of that stuff works. And like I said the other day, you got to coach to the player. For Josh Myers, maybe he needed that boost of confidence in the media to hear that he, you know, the coaching staff in the front office thinks that he's doing great. And maybe that's what he needed. And he was going to play with a little bit more confidence that way. Maybe Sean Ryan needs to get dragged in the dirt a little bit in the media, and that makes him more motivated and work harder. I don't know, but it was just always interesting, the juxtaposition. I've always liked Sean. I liked him coming out. Obviously, the first year was an unmitigated nightmare because he came in out of shape and then had the suspension and was never in the conversation for even getting remotely near a starting offensive line spot in that first season. He was basically the 53rd guy on a 53-man roster. Then he comes back next year. They talk about him being out of shape again, and I didn't know if he was going to make it out of camp, but then he does. He rotates in by the end of the year with John Runyon Jr. That served him well. Thought he had a really nice year a season ago as a starting right guard. And now he's going into year four as a basically second year starter. I think he's a good player. I would kind of like to see him brought back, quite frankly, but I think there's a really good chance that he ends up elsewhere. And again, Green Bay goes a little bit younger. It has opportunities for Belton and Jordan Morgan. But out of the three, Zach Tom, Sean Ryan, and Rashid Walker, I think Zach Tom's by far and away the most likely. If they do bring one other back, I think it's probably Sean Ryan, but I think it's probably one of the three, and I think that one is very likely to be Zach Tom. Next up is Malik Willis. We've talked about Malik quite a bit. He's an unrestricted free agent, and I've talked about it, but just saying, hey, if I'm his agent or if I'm Malik Willis, I'm just going to a team that has a worse quarterback or that I might get an opportunity to either A, actually compete for a starting job, or B, just go to a team that has a crappy starter. So at some point they might get benched and I might get an opportunity, or C, go to a team that's going to draft a rookie in the first round and they might need either a stopgap guy or a mentor or somebody that's got a little bit more experience. Can I go there and maybe get some opportunities to start before that rookie is ready? And then I'm going to probably get my job taken at some point, but at least I have the opportunity to maybe prove myself a little bit more. I think he's got a really great gig, and I think he fits perfectly in Matt LaFleur's offense. If I'm Goody, I'm trying to re-sign him to some deal, but if I'm Malik and his agent, I'm saying I got to go somewhere else to see if I might get an opportunity to start, and that opportunity just does not exist in Green Bay. Next is Isaiah Simmons. He's, of course, going to have to make the roster first this year. If he makes it, stays on the team the entire year, he will be an unrestricted free agent. If he plays great, he'll probably get paid somewhere else. If he's okay, kind of core special teams guy, Green Bay can kind of probably try to keep him in the fold with a little bit of a lesser contract. But like I said, first things first, he's just got to make the team. Same thing with Mecole Hardman at wide receiver. We'll see if he is in Green Bay's plans. They've got five locks to make the team at wide receiver already. Christian Watson coming back at some point, which would be the sixth. And probably Mecole Hardman, Bo Melton, and Malik Heath for now going to have to fight over that number six wide receiver spot. And as I've said, they could probably cut all three of those guys and still get two of them back in the practice squad. But first things first, if Hardman makes the team, then he will make the team and he'll be an unrestricted free agent next year if that does come to fruition. John Fitzpatrick, same conversation. Unrestricted free agent next year. Will battle out Ben Sims. If he makes the team as the number three tight end and plays throughout the season, stays on the team, he'll be unrestricted next year as well. One of the more interesting ones is Christian Watson. With Watson, of course, the injury clouds everything. When he comes back, how he looks when he comes back, and his productivity when he comes back is going to define a lot of this. The interesting thing is, I think if he goes out and just looks unbelievable and dominates and looks great, I think it's more likely that some other team says, we'll take the flyer. We'll give him a four-year, $80 million deal. Front-loaded for the first 2 years. All the guarantees paid up front. Probably not a ton of guarantees. And we'll take the flyer on him. And Green Bay says, yeah, we just can't get into that business. It's too expensive for us. I think if he plays okay, I think that you're probably in a 1 year, maybe let's bring you back. You know the offense here. You can have a great year next year and then get a big contract the year after that somewhere else. And I think there is probably that line where you can maybe get him back where other teams maybe aren't quite as excited about him and you get him back on a cheaper deal and allow, you know, Green Bay to have another really talented wide receiver and Watson one more kind of prove it year before he goes out and hopefully hits it big the following year in free agency. And then if he just plays bad, that is another interesting connotation. I think you probably still get closer to maybe Green Bay being the team that offers him the 1 year opportunity to come back and hopefully bounce back in a year removed from that torn ACL and MCL. We'll be right back. Last but not least is Quay Walker. They did not pick up his fifth year option. They did pick it up on Devontae Wyatt. I'm really interested to see what happens here. My guess is they work out some sort of extension at some point this season, probably like a three-year, $45 million deal would be my guess. That's kind of been the going rate for these type of linebackers. Quay could wait that out if he thinks he's going to have a really big year this year and then try to hit free agency and maybe get paid a little bit more. But if he wants a little bit of job security, if Green Bay is willing to go in that direction, I think a three-year 45 makes all the sense in the world. Quay's been up and down. That might seem a little bit exorbitant, but that's what the going rate for that level of linebacker is. Just know linebacker is a little bit weak in the NFL right now in totality. And it's really hard to find these guys in college at the moment. Look at this year. Carson Schweschinger from UCLA goes early round two because there's just not a lot of linebackers in this class. Probably a little bit of an overdraft because they were going to lose JOK, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, to the neck injury this year. But it's really tough to find these guys. When you find them, you kind of want to hang on to them. And my guess would be that Quay Walker is back in Green Bay in some way. But again, a very interesting one to keep an eye on. So unrestricted free agents, the ones you probably don't need to know as much, Trey Hill and Christian Welch. And then the other ones, Rashid Walker, Kingsley Nigbare, Zach Tom, Romeo Doubs, Matt Orzek, Sean Ryan, Malik Willis, Isaiah Simmons, Mecole Hardman, John Fitzpatrick, Christian Watson, and Quay Walker. You do have some potential miscellaneous restricted free agents, Isaiah Dunn, Nesta Jade Silvera, Aaron Mosby, and Sean Clifford. If they make the team, they'll be restricted free agents. They got to make the team first. I don't necessarily see that happening with any of those guys. They do have a list of eight true restricted free agents that are a little bit more interesting. Malik Heath, Brenton Cox, Ben Sims, Chris Brooks, Emmanuel Wilson, Bo Melton, Daniel Whalen, and Zane Anderson. We'll run through these quick. Malik Heath's going to have to make the team first. If he does, it'll be close. I think they probably do not tender him a restricted free agent and let him become unrestricted and then kind of do the John Fitzpatrick thing where they try to get him back a little bit cheaper. That'd be my guess there. Brenton Cox is very interesting. Again, he's going to have to make the team first, but if he makes it, he could be somebody that legitimately gets that like three-ish million dollar original tender, but it's a UDFA tender. So if some other team signs him, Green Bay gets nothing in return. Green Bay would have the ability to match it, but that would be an interesting one, especially if he goes out and plays well this year. Ben Sims, probably even if he makes the team, is one of those where you're not tendering him, trying to get him back cheaper on maybe a one-year deal. Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson, again, both are going to have to try to make the team first. If one of them showed out very well this year, you could potentially bring him back, but $3 million plus for a running back is a little bit expensive. That might be a little bit exorbitant for either of those players, but Green Bay will have to take a look at both of them, depending on which one, if not both, actually make the roster. Bo Melton, again, he's going to have to make the team. I'm not sure that's going to happen at the moment. I'm a big Bo Melton believer, but He's got tough sledding with Malik Heath and Mecole Hardman for one spot. And I think it's going to be tough to earn that restricted free agent tender, which would likely make him an unrestricted free agent. Daniel Willen, if he goes out and punts well, I think Green Bay will likely tender him as a restricted free agent, but this is going to be a really big year for him. And then Zane Anderson, a very interesting one. If he does make the team and is still a core special teamer, I could see Green Bay potentially tendering him, but that one's going to be a little bit closer. They could look to release or not release him, but rescind it and let him be an unrestricted free agent, trying to get him back a little bit cheaper. But a lot of that's going to be dependent on how he plays on defense and special teams this year. And again, he's just going to have to make the team first. You have three noteworthy exclusive rights free agents: Kalen King, Kadeem Telfort, and Kamal Haddon. If any of those three make the team, they're going to be in a good spot with those three because they're exclusive rights. Those are minimum free agents that are under complete team control. The players have no real avenue to hold out or do anything like that. They just have to take the contracts on a vet minimum for their age or for how many years they've been in the league. And it's a very advantageous deal for Green Bay. Haddon, Telfort, and King will have to make the roster first, but if they do, it's basically a full extra year of team control on a extremely, extremely cheap 2026 deal. Others that would be exclusive rights free agents: Alex Hale, Julian Hicks, Donovan Jennings, Cornelius Johnson, Johnny Lumpkin, James Esther, Keith Randolph, Deslon Alexander, Jeremiah Martin, and Omar Brown. Those 10 would have to find ways on the roster first in order to be exclusive rights free agents next year. Then you get a list of veterans who basically the team will have some sort of option on. Xavier McKinney and Aaron Banks, you could theoretically get out of in some way. I don't really see either of those happening. There are a handful of players that Green Bay will have legitimate options on. The first is Kenny Clark. You would take on $17 million in dead cap hit. They could prorate that over two seasons if they wanted to do it as a post-June 1st. But he is set to have a $31 million cap hit next year. And the Packers would save over $14 million against the cap by releasing Kenny Clark. And again, they could even save more than that if they want to do it with a post-June 1st designation. So Kenny Clark is going to have to go out, basically treat this like a contract year. If he has a great year, Green Bay could hold on to him. If he doesn't, Green Bay does have the ability to get out of that contract next year. Jair Alexander, if he's back, this entire scenario that happened this year, unless they end up voiding that final year of his deal, will happen again next year, basically. This year, they've got a one-year $17.5 million team option. Next year, it's a one-year $19.5 million team option. So $2 million more. Green Bay will probably do something with the contract if he's back, so it's probably much ado about nothing. But somehow, some way, if he's back on the same contract that he's on now and nothing changes, Green Bay basically has another team option for one-year $19.5 million next year. They could release him or trade him and get out of that entirely, and we could go through this all again next year. I don't expect that to be the case, but if it is, it is possible. Elgton Jenkins, we've talked about this. 1 year, $20 million left on that deal for Green Bay. Completely up to the Packers as of right now, unless they redo something with Elgton being a little bit unhappy at the moment. If Green Bay wants to keep him, it's a one-year, $20 million deal. They could go and try to restructure it or do some void years if they wanted to do it that way, or they could just release him or trade him and save the entire $20 million. That's an option as well. I think that's what Elton's trying to avoid, is basically being in the same Jair situation that Jair's in right now and getting a little bit more guarantee with the team. We'll see if he's able to do that, but for right now, it's a one-year $20 million team option for Green Bay. Josh Jacobs, he'll have $6.25 million in dead cap hit, but they could save over $8 million. Just don't see that happening. But if he does have a down year, starts to show signs of wear and tear, they do have a potential out there. Keyshawn Nixon, it's basically a one-year $5 million team option. That's super cheap, especially for what Keyshawn's giving you, so he'll likely just be back. And then Isaiah McDuffie will basically have what amounts to a one-year $3.75 million team option as well. We'll see how he does this year and if Green Bay wants to bring him back for the second year of that contract. That's it. Those are your decisions that Green Bay is going to have to make next year when it comes to free agents. The noteworthy unrestricted free agents: Rashid Walker, Kingsley Enagbare, Zach Tom, Romeo Doubs, Matt Orzech, Sean Ryan, Malik Willis, Isaiah Simmons, Mecole Hardman, John Fitzpatrick, Christian Watson, and Quay Walker. Your noteworthy restricted free agents: Malik Heath, Brenton Cox, Ben Sims, Chris Brooks, Emmanuel Wilson, Bo Melton, Daniel Whalen, and Zane Anderson. And your noteworthy exclusive rights free agents: Kalen King, Kadeem Telfort, and Kamal Haddon, with veterans under big contracts that Green Bay could theoretically get out of that include Kenny Clark, Jair Alexander, Elgton Jenkins, Josh Jacobs, Keyshawn Nixon, and Isaiah McDuffie. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you as always for joining me. I appreciate it a ton. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.